Hi, my name is Robert, and I'm welcoming you to this month's edition of CLAC's Anti-Capitalist Alphabet. Every month, the Agitation and Propaganda Committee of CLAC, Montreal's Anti-Capitalist Convergence, take one word to analyze the news from an anti-capitalist perspective. To hear our previous episode of the Anti-Capitalist Alphabet, visit clac-montreal.net. This month, we took S for shit pump. Yes, I refer to the tar sands exploitation in the pipelines that are now allowed to be built all over North America with the right-wing wave that is coming through. But first, let's get some distance from the actual pipelines and let's get into a different perspective. Back to the basics of the topic, I'd like to talk about why such infrastructures are so bad and talk about resource exhaustion and finally get back to the new developments and infrastructures that are coming up. First off, let's talk about infrastructures. So-called Canada was built around the railroad. Everywhere the train was going, there were settlements that were built. And still today, we can see that the development of Canadian city maps was strongly influenced by the construction of railways, replacing waterways as the major way to transport merchandise. Because before the train arrived, the canals in the southwest were dug, serving as infrastructures that provided a cheap way of getting masses of goods to the port and then shipped out abroad. But why do we need more and more of those channels of transportation for goods? Why are the old ones obsolete? This relates strongly to the nature of the capitalist economy. Basically, large enterprises need to increase their profit year after year in order to get their shareholders to keep investing in them. One of the easiest and most common ways of doing so is by increasing the volume of production. By centralizing and concentrating the production in fewer places, they can generally reduce the costs with some of those in some different ways. Specializing labor in simpler operations, using faster and bigger machines, and simplifying the supply of resources and shipping of finished goods. Therefore, we can see how this centralization of production leads to a constant need for bigger infrastructures, which in turn brings productivity in other sectors higher and higher. Just think how the construction of a network of cell phone towers in the last 15 years has changed our society. Or before that, think about the widespread distribution of broadband internet that really changed our daily lives and how much they've incited us to purchase goods, smartphones, laptops, tablets. Or think about the electrification that brought us needs that are still increasing to these days, as you might know, like the electricity consumption in the residential sector is still increasing. In the last 10 years, it has increased by 25%. Infrastructures are the lifeline of the new forms of industry and commerce. Pipeline will not only bring pipelines, they will also bring refineries, ports, plastic manufacture, paint industry, and other toxic industries because they make their primary resources a lot cheaper. So something that transportation projects have in common with major extractive projects is that they are so dependent on credit that even when they're not profitable, they need to keep on running to pay back their investors. For example, the Energy East pipeline is estimated at $15 billion. So over 40 years, the estimated lifespan of the pipeline, it needs to bring $1 million per day just to cover its initial construction, knowing that the labor costs associated with its maintenance are marginal at $200,000 per day. It means that if you would stop the pipeline just because you're not making a profit at a given time, you would lose $1 million per day just to save $200,000. So you can't stop it ever. In other words, once the pipeline is built, it means that it won't stop until the tar sands are fully empty. And that's a drastic conclusion. But there's even worse to that, because it brings us into the second topic, the fact that resources never really go extinct. For example, for a long time, hydrocarbons reserves didn't take into account tar sands, as they were not seen profitable enough to be exploited. The same thing happened in the estimation of the Energy East analysis of the demands for transportation of tar and bitumen. It contains a list of information about future fracking projects in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba that are not currently financially sustainable, but will be with the increase of the price of the hydrocarbons due to the increasing demand and reduction of the production and other forms of cheaper extraction. So if the pipeline goes through, not only the tar sands extraction will keep on expanding for the 10-20 years, but it also guarantees further fracking in 20 and 30 years, and possibly even more environmentally damaging practices in the future. And by then, the pipeline might be reconverted to more environmentally destructive forms of production. As I said before, once the infrastructure is built, it has to be used. And every other form of environmental struggle that will happen in the next 40 years will be plagued by the fact that there will be a pipeline that will cheap transportation. And not only on the route of the pipeline, the Energy East pipeline is currently part of other oil transportation infrastructure and is branching off to current systems that are already installed. So having a backbone for transportation allows connection anywhere along the way, and therefore for hundreds of kilometers in either direction from it, because it will be more effective to branch it off than to build smaller infrastructures beside it. Which brings us to the core of this discussion with the new upcoming pipelines. First off, the fact that the one that has been drawing much attention, the Dakota Access Pipeline. It connects us from the southbound pipelines coming to the tar sands. To the tar sands to the trunk line in Illinois. Basically, it is connecting the tar sands to the rest of the oil distribution network in North America to the Texan exportation ports. The first thing to point out is that its pipeline designed to carry 370,000 barrels per day, or about a third of the size of the Energy East pipeline. However, the tar sands production is estimated at 2.3 million per barrel per day, so it would make a significant dent in what is currently shipped by trains or other means of transportation. Trudeau officially approved the APL, as it is a fantastic opportunity for the Canadian government, essentially outsourcing the oil spills to the U.S. side of the border without having to pay the political price to support such a polluting industry. Also, while the bulk of the attention is currently turned to the DAPL and Trump, two other much more massive pipeline improvement projects were approved in Canada at the beginning of the year. First off, the Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline. Improvement to lines that will be allowed to transport for up to 900,000 barrels per day, or 2.5 DAPL, and those pipelines are going to the Burnaby Port, a part of Vancouver metropolitan area. Also, the improvement of the Enbridge Line 3 was approved, which will bring another 760,000 barrels per day, or 2 DAPL improvement in the capacity. It connects from Alberta to Superior, Wisconsin, the closest point of contact to the Enbridge network that eventually brings that to the Texan exportation ports. Even though those two major construction projects were approved by the Canadian government, they do not even threaten the economic viability of the Energy East pipeline, which at the end of this construction in 2020, the tar sands will have a capacity of extraction about 4 million barrels per day. So even if those two pipelines are there, like the Energy East pipeline, is still on top of our head and is still threatening us. So of course, by trying to sum up what we're at with the development of the shit pumps all over North America, I've somehow skipped over what pump is shit, what shit is being pumped. So the pipelines that will be carrying diluted bitumen, which is essentially a thick peanut butter-like consistency grease that is suspended into paint thinner. When those pipelines breach, the bitumen part just oozes out as the thinner evaporates, causing nausea, headache, and dizziness to nearby residents. So what is carried at unbelievable speed across major city is a product that humans can't be in contact with at all. And as anyone who ever built a patio would know, the ground moves a lot, and therefore it is extremely risky to carry such things at such speeds. However, the companies have insurance policies, right? Sadly, what is currently going on is that the Canadian government really wants the foreign investment of capital in those projects and is sacrificing everyone's safety on behalf of creating jobs fast to get re-elected in 2 or 3 years when those jobs will be there. Take, for example, the Line 6B that broke in Kalamazoo River in the U.S. in 2010. For that line, Enbridge was insured up to $585 million, and the spill will probably cost $1.4 million to clean up when it will be finished being cleaning up, because it's still undergoing cleanup for the last 7 years. So, we would expect that no project would be accepted if they don't have an insurance covering up to $1.5 billion, which was the cost of cleaning up. So, for a project like the Energy East Pipeline that transports twice as much oil, we would expect that the insurance would be at least $3 billion. However, when we read the assessment and what was approved by the National Energy Board, they accepted an insurance of $100 million, or one-tenth of one-fifth of what was the insurance of the Line 6B in the U.S., so, or about 3% of what is expected from the previous spills. So not only if we assume that cleanup can actually fully recover an ecosystem to its original state, not a single thought is being put into ensuring that funds for cleaning up will be in place. And that's for the big spills. What about the routine incidents? Just for the exercise, say that a pipeline can carry 1 million barrels per day of diluted bitumen. in an hour, it carries 7 million liters of toxic sludge. In the Energy East environmental assessment, they mentioned that the leak detection system will be in place to have a 15-minute turnover time to stop the flow, which is promised. But however, they will have a hard time implementing it in real life, quote unquote. So it still means that on average, it will be 200,000 liters of toxic goo that will be spilled. And it's seen as okay by the National Energy Board to have minor incidents like that happening over and over again. And first-hand account, yes, so just like that, on January 14 this year, 200,000 liters got spilled in Saskatchewan by a pipeline in the same situation. And first-hand accounts of activists that turned off the valve of Line 9, they mentioned that it took hours for anyone to come to open up the valve. So this is the day-to-day of the pipeline, or the spills that they will often be able to hide because no one else noticed, and which are really drastic problems. So I wanted to underline here that the pipelines are a much bigger issue than just the tar sands, and that from a mostly economic perspective, they are necessary for growth. This is why we need to applaud the native resistance to the pipeline that is going on all across North America, keeping in mind that it's important not only to fight against the pipelines, but also against the economic system that makes them a necessity. The government feeds off the economic growth and haven't done a significant thing in years to protect us from the endless growth that capitalism needs. We need to use the tar sands as a jumping board to show the horrendous conclusion to which capitalism brings us, and so we can bring a real long-lasting change that can free us not only from the tar sands, but from the perpetual construction of infrastructure that destroy the environment and leave us more dependent on a system that destroys our lives.
I had two questions, and I feel like it's heartfelt, really. And I just want to know, with what happened at the Lac Mégantic, do you think that there's any other way to transport oil other than a pipeline?
I don't think we need to transport more oil. I think we need to think about our production and our consumption, and I really think our societies. There's cities, you know, in Europe where there's no cars, you know, people are only using bicycles to transport themselves. Montreal might be hard, but I mean, there's a lot of ways in which we can reduce consumption of petroleum and our dependency on hydrocarbons. I think that those will be really much more better things to research rather than trying to find ways of, you know, it's a long-term problem more than a...
It is. And now that, you know, of course, this pipeline will be more benefit for the government than us, of course. Do you think that has up to now people need to change the ways or the how they see things towards oil or money and everything that it's related with that?
I really think that people, I mean, we all are struggling in different ways to figure out like how society works and how, you know, like the economic system works. And I think it's really important to think about those things and think about like the long-term change in the government and see the economic changes and how it affects us, and really like try to get free of an economic system that basically forces us to have bosses and have, you know, go to the factory and just get work. Because like what is currently going on is really that for 200s of years we've been going, you know, working for factories and giving our bosses more, you know, they usually make much more money on our back than we do, and they're using those profits to build new infrastructures and keeping us more and more in a situation of domination. Like we've been trying to you know, do different things. And I don't know. I mean, like, we're trying to organize different events and trying to organize resistance. And I think, you know, if we all fight against the bosses, if we all fight against the environmental destruction, if we all fight against the system in our different ways, and we try to get along and try to not reproduce the system that we're out of, and we're trying to not reproduce because we're trying to be a system that would be better than this one. And I think that maybe we can get somewhere. I really think that it's not in the individual, it's not an individual thing that's come from a personal, you know, like it's not like, oh, I'm taking my bike to work, I'm changing something. But it's more about thinking as a society, thinking who gets the most exploited, thinking about how you can help them. And, you know, because like there's always going to be people that are going to be more exploited than us and that are going to be accepting the job to destroy the environment. It's about like making sure that they have what they need in life so they can refuse those jobs and making sure that we all have what we want in the end. And because we're producing everything that society has to give, right?
Yes,
where it's all us that produce it, and basically like we keep giving everything to them and ending up with nothing.
Well, what do you think about, you know, Trump said that he doesn't really believe in, you know, the heat of environment and that there is a ozone problem. He doesn't believe in it. What do you think about that?
I believe that it's sad, but it's an economic necessity for governments to say things like that. I believe that it's just like George W. Bush, right? He looked dumb, but he knew where he was going, and he was pushing the right lines and was pushing them at the right place. So really, like, there's a lot of, you know, like, there's like his mindset, as problematic and destructive that it is actually it makes sense for what he wants to do, which is really like ensuring that people hate each other, can't form strong resistance movement, can't organize themselves, and really like just dividing us with hate. And I think that that's really like frightening. And I hope that, we can actually, you know, survive after that.
Well, I hope so too. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for coming in. Is there any address or email that, or Facebook page that people can reach you at?
We're not on Facebook because Facebook is
it is.
It's a capitalist corporation. And I don't like Facebook personally, but we have a website. It's clac-montreal.net, on which you can find a lot of our publications. We have newspapers, we have brochures, we have more information about the economic system and other things, and how it relates to patriarchy, you know, white supremacy and other systems of oppression that, you know, makes us poor. Yep.
Thank you very much.
That's nothing. Have a good day.
Thank you.